but I wouldn't push it past 5:30.
And when we, when we're done, we just close the public hearing. We don't take any.
There's
no other business to do.
No, there is nothing else on the agenda. We can't do any of business because we haven't posted it.
Good.
I would just announce at the end that there will be another public hearing next Tuesday.
Okay.
Representative here in this room. Okay, good. Okay.
And it will be at what time again?
Thursday. 3:00.
Bruce is going to be a few minutes
later. 3 to 4, recess 4 to 6.
3 p.m. next Tuesday.
I think we're
and then that back at 6?
Yes.
Okay.
Good afternoon. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2229. This is the House Land Use Committee meeting on Tuesday, February 3rd, 2009. Welcome to all of you who have come to help us understand this bill. A couple of things I want the audience, both here in the room and watching on video, to understand. You may see members of the committee using laptop computers. It is our attempt to go paperless, and they are tracking bills electronically. And so they are actually engaged in the business here before the committee. This is our first public testimony hearing on this important bill, and it's a bill that has a lot of different components, and so I think we'll hear about different aspects of the bill today. We will have a second public hearing next Tuesday. This is both for the benefit of committee members. We've talked about this before, but also to the public. Next Tuesday, our hearing will begin at 3 o'clock and continue for an hour. We will recess then for 2 hours so that members of this committee can attend an important function here in the Capitol, in Salem, related to land use. And then we will reopen that hearing at 6 o'clock and run until 8 o'clock when we will adjourn, so that we have time in the evening when people who can't get to the Capitol during the day because of their jobs will still have time to visit with us and talk to us about their concerns and ideas about the bill. That's all publicly posted, but I wanted people here to know about it. Also want to remind people, we have a lot of folks signed up to testify, and we want to hear from as many of you as possible. So as our original posting had requested, we would like you to confine your verbal testimony to 2 minutes. We welcome you to submit written information. It will be distributed to all the committee members. It will be made a part of our official record as we consider this bill. Ms. Ross will be helping me remind you about the timing so that you can get a little bit of advance notice. Do you have a 30-second notice that you can give them?
I don't. It runs down from the 2 minutes, Madam
Chair.
Okay,
so we'll try to, we'll make a sign that says 30 seconds so that you know to close up. And we want to make sure that all the issues that might be of concern to people here are put on the record as well. So we may adjust the sequencing of the testimony in order to make sure that an issue that hasn't yet come up is put before us so that it can help the committee members weigh all those concerns. And finally, we do give deference to people who have traveled an extensive distance to be here, for whom it would be impractical to return if we run out of time. So I will be mindful of that as well to make sure those people have an opportunity to testify. With all of that, committee members, it is our job to listen to what they have to say, mostly rather than to pontificate ourselves. You are the stars of today's hearing, not us. And I'm going to call people up three at a time so that we can expedite the actual testimony when we get there. Before we start, I want our vice chairs to put into the record written testimony we have already received, just by name of sender, so that it is officially in our record. Vice Chair Garrett.
Madam Chair, testimony was received from the following person is distributed to all members of the committee and is now incorporated in the public record on House Bill 2229. John Brandt of Staten, Phil Drain of Salem, Eileen P. Kay of Turner, Trudy Margulis of Salem, Sarah O'Brien of Defenders of Wildlife, Dr. Michelle Raven, and Shelley Wetherell of Umpqua.
Thank you, Vice Chair Garrett. Vice Chair Esquivel?
Yes, Madam Chair. I also have people that have written in or emailed in for the record. It's a William Boyd, a Carol Doty, a David Harrison, James B. Knight, Greg Morris, Robert and Gretchen Peterson, and Mark Tipperman.
Excellent. And all of that testimony has been provided to all members of the committee and is part of the official record. Now, if I might...
Would there be a way to get those on a website or something so we're not trying to file all those documents that we have access to?
I don't know. We'll take that up separately. Good idea, since we are trying to save a few trees. Thank you, Representative. I would like to call Lolita Carl, Roger Kay, and Mia Nelson to the witness table. And on deck, just so you know, I have Dr. Peter Walker, Leniel Vandermolen, and Henry Pinn, on deck. Mr. Pia, you're in the second round.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to alert you so you know to be ready. Who was my third? Mia Nelson? Oh, there she is. Okay. Ms. Carl.
Am I supposed to give my address?
Simply your name.
Lolita Carl. As a full-time farmer...
Okay, I'm sorry, Ms. Carl. I've been corrected. Your name and county of residence.
Marion County.
Thank you.
As a full-time farmer, I appreciate the time the Big Look has taken to examine land use planning. I was disappointed that there was no meeting in the Willamette Valley where the best soils are and the most pressure threatens dedicated local farming. Five generations of our family have lived on our farm. East of 99E, it is being threatened by both Woodburns and Hubbard's expanding urban growth boundaries. The really Big Look would see that we need to protect our agricultural lands to feed upcoming generations. I have no doubt that the grass seed fields on our farm will someday be back in grains, fruits, nuts, and vegetables. This is not only a huge economic factor, but also a security issue for our homeland. Never mind that agriculture is Marion County's number one industry. Typically, local control means little city councils, planners, and county officials trying to convert farmland into commercial, industrial, or residential. Only St. Paul has reduced its UGB. Cities should be encouraged to grow up, not out. Wine grapes are the usual crop mentioned in growing well on poor quality soils. How many others have not yet been discovered? Please, don't be short-sighted and promote farm and forest land redesignation and sprawl. If it were up to Marion County, countless acres would be paved over forever. And I think that two-county designation agreement idea is terrible. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carl. Mr. Kay?
Good afternoon, Chair Nolan, members of the committee. My name is Roger Kay, current president of Friends of Marion County, Marion County, Oregon. Since 1998, Friends of Marion County, an established land use advocacy group, has been active in county and state legislative matters. Our members have served on the County Planning Commission and other county volunteer panels. HB 229 and the process which the Big Look Task Force used to develop it are faulty. Numerous comments by our members to the task force related to the entire process of gathering data. When their work is carefully examined, you will see a very weak structure supporting their recommendations. Where is the data to support these recommendations? The bill tries to rewrite the entire structure of Oregon's land use system with a few guiding principles, but leaves the heavy lifting for another day. It bites off far more than we can chew. For instance, when we consider Section 6, which proposes agreements between two or more counties, the measure does not address Metro's member county agreements. Does this mean that Clackamas County can violate its Metro agreements to form another alliance with Marion County? We hope not, but it is not clear in this bill. Also, local control of rural areas is the most susceptible to development interests, and that is what this lack of control at the local level, which led to our statewide land use system in the first place. Utter confusion is my final comment about this measure. Nobody knows what the fiscal, environmental, statutory, or regulatory impact will be. Unintended consequences are looming. The people spoke loud and clear with the passage of Measure 49. The system is not broken, so please don't try to fix it. And attached to the back of my written testimony are 3 pages of specific comments that you can see that one of our members put together about the poor provisions in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kay. Ms. Nelson?
I'm Mia Nelson of Lane County. I understand the Big Look started with good intentions. Unfortunately, along the way, a number of things have gone wrong, and some of the problems involve the underpinnings of the whole effort, leaving the Big Look without a solid foundation. I'm going to address just one such problem, the gross overestimation of future population. Page 1 of the final report states the recommendations are based on, quote, the understanding we expect as many as 2 million more residents in the next 25 years. This is not what the forecasting community believes will really happen. Incredibly, the Big Look Task Force did not bother to ask the state's leading demographers for help in developing this forecast. The final report is silent on the source of these numbers. There's a video on YouTube of Dr. George Howe, the director of Portland State's Population Research Center, disputing the accuracy of the Big Look forecast. I really encourage you, all of you, to view it. The web address is in my letter. Here are some quotes. In the Big Look, I'm not quite sure how they're counting these people or how they're double counting these people, but those numbers, the 1.7 million they use, are based on projections that I don't know hold anymore. Our office has not been asked our opinion. I think, once again, this is another number that's sort of just run away, run amok from people. Once it gets out there, if you repeat it enough times, people take it as truth, and here's where you end up. The sky is falling sort of scenario, but it's like, who actually said there are going to be 1.7 million people? End quote. The Big Look claims that radical changes to Oregon's land use system are needed to accommodate this presumed huge population increase. At a Big Look public meeting, we were told that building on outlying rural lands was needed to accommodate all the new people. Sections 5 through 8, which would allow intensified development on rural land, should be stricken. These recommendations relied heavily on the inflated population projections for their justification. You should not adopt proposals based on faulty assumptions. I believe your best plan is just to delete Sections 5 through 8. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. I had called Dr. Peter Walker, but I now see that the note indicates that he has had to go to another meeting and will be back. Is he in the room? We'll put him further down the queue then. I have Lanil Vandermolen, Henry Pia, and I'll call Kathleen Carl. Now on deck for the next panel will be Susan Hansen, Joan Zuber, and Robert Emmons. Ms. Vandermolen?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. My name is Lanil Vandermolen. I'm from Clackamas County. And as a farmer, and as a conservative person, really, I'm very wary of any kind of governmental overreach into our lives and how we conduct ourselves. But land is a finite resource, and there are many of us who are still making a living off the land, and we're continually being threatened not only by encroaching development but by very powerful interests whom I'm afraid will exercise even more power if we turn over too much control of land use to counties, because counties will be even more susceptible to those squeaky wheels. And in the current bill, I'm concerned about such buzz phrases as wasteland being misused, because today's wasteland is tomorrow's vineyard. And so we don't always know the value of certain properties today compared to what they're going to be in the future. And so I don't pretend to be an expert on the various goals of our state when it comes to land use planning, but I am very, very wary of turning over too much control to counties. And I believe that in this one situation, an overall but updated land use system will protect farmland and farmers who are still on it against those kind of passionate excesses that we sometimes see in an exploitative movement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Pierre?
Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Henry Pierre, and I mean Marion County. I own 110 acres under SA zoning, consists of 70 acres of cropland and 40 acres of forest deferred. Topsoil is about 2 to 3 feet, and 80 to 85% of the land is relatively with a high slope. And there is no irrigation water at all. After 450 feet, there is only 6 gallons. Land use is very, use of land is very limited. Within the last 3 years, I tried to get a permit for one single home on this property for myself, for my family, that we don't own any home in this country or in this state or in this country. Even that, I'm running into a lot of hardship for the last 3 years with the local government, with the county. Even though after 3 years they approved, the commissioners approved the application, then one of the neighbors stepped forward and he put a stop to it. And he went before the LUBA. My attorney said the best way would be you just pay him off. And finally, they decided between my attorney and his attorney and the county attorney, they decided I'll pay $7,300 plus not to ask any question about all the problem that he has caused as a result of a piping tiling system that he has done on the hillside, the value of almost $34,000 damages. I didn't pay the money to him, and I find it as extortion. The attorneys might find some other terms for it, but I see that's purely that's extortion. The current law does not stop any person, any neighbor, come forward and ask for monetary fund or any gain that stops the next person who's trying to get a home permit. And there are a number of different issues that the current doesn't, the current law doesn't stop the, doesn't address the situations properly, such as $80,000 income, such a, if it's a high land, or $40,000 for a low value land, doesn't stop the neighbors from extortion.
Sir Pierre, can you wrap it up, please?
Yes, two more sentences. Primarily, the county told me that your land is high value, and later on, the NRCS find out that it's only low, it's 40% high value, and it's not what the whole thing was being based on. And I hope the summary that I made in a few pages would assist better than in a very short time that I can say it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Carl?
My name is Kathleen Carl, and I reside in Marion County. I'm part of a farm family here. I'd like to speak against the idea that two counties can go together and put together a new definition of forest and agricultural land. First, counties already have a process for redesignating land and have redesignated over 20,000 acres since 1989. There's already an existing process. The task force found that there is not a lot of land that has been wrongly designated, so let's keep this system. Second, this seems like it will be based on the whims of counties and will set up things for even more fights. Big Look acknowledged that Oregon's land use system has done a good job. Do not mess it up with weaker standards and many more fights. Third, my experience with Marion County is that the commissioners are completely pro-development in Oregon's number one agricultural county, Marion County. There is a reason that our state and our country have Supreme Courts. There's a reason we have LUPA. There needs to be as close as possible and our final arbiter who uses the same laws for everyone, not different laws for different counties. County commissioners should not be making helter-skelter changes. We do not know what the future holds for agriculture, but we know we need to eat. So let's plan and protect that future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. We'll bring Susan Hansen, Joan Zuber, and Robert Emmons to the witness table. And on deck, we'll have Sarah O'Brien, Jim Gilbert, and Sarah Doomling.
I can tell you Joan Zuber will be late, so you might want to postpone her.
So I will put Joan Zuber to the bottom of the list. Then I'll ask Sarah O'Brien to join this panel. Is Ms. O'Brien here? And on deck, we'll have Jim Gilbert, Sarah Doomling, and David Adams. Okay. Ms. Hansen, then?
Susan Hansen, Clackamas County. Oregon land use is at a dangerous crossroads. From the start, the Big Look might have better been named Measure 37 Redo. For over 30 years, Moore, Oregon has been the leader in ethical land use planning to protect our fragile and finite resources. The biased Big Look, with its preconceived belief that local control is needed, seems to undo Tom McCall's legacy by promoting sprawl. I attended the Prejudice Cattle Call Big Look meeting in Portland with canned questions. I later read that more personal meetings were provided in less populated areas. At the task force work session in October in Salem, I listened in awe as experts from the Institute for Natural Resources presented the commissioned report that proves conclusively that our land use rules have worked very well to protect natural resources and to keep cities vital. Mr. Thorne attempted to prevent the assembled experts from presenting this report by saying the Big Look panel didn't have time to hear them. If you have not read this report, I suggest you immediately do so. It alarmed one Big Look panel member enough to say that he didn't believe he could, in good conscience, vote to change our successful land use rules. Ironically, a big flaw noted by the Institute experts was the difficulty in implementing and codifying Goal 1, citizen involvement in planning. That is also a huge flaw in the Big Look. At the work session, a representative for the League of Women Voters protested the format and content of the public meetings. Your choice is clear. Follow the proposed path to local control, which would foster sprawl driven by the greedy and corrupt needs of land speculators and developers, or honor the hard work of 30 years and protect all resource lands as equal, using the universal and balanced rules that have successfully protected Oregon from Californication. I think future Oregonians will thank you for your wisdom if you follow the protective second path. Our resources for expanding infrastructure are as finite as the lands that the Big Look would open for plunder. Oregon deserves far better than that ugly future. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll put Ms. Zuber to the end of the roster. Mr. Emmons?
Yes. Yes, I am Robert Emmons, president of Landwatch Lane County. It's a nonprofit devoted to stopping sprawl on our farms, forests, and natural areas in Lane County. Now, one would reasonably expect any revision of Oregon's land use system to respond to global warming and energy depletion, the passage of Measure 49, and the economic crisis by strengthening regulatory protections of our natural resources and our farm and forest economies. Instead, House Bill 2229 allows counties and cities to provide their own definitions of agricultural and forest land and to, quote, redesignate as other rural land those farmlands and forest lands that do not fit in the regional definitions. Permitting counties and cities to establish their own definitions of resource land would subject it to the whims of local political jurisdictions and facilitate the short-sighted goal of providing open range to unbridled development. We ask, therefore, that Sections 5 through 8 of this bill be eliminated. Now, sections, to go back a bit, Sections 2 and 3 begin with the mandate that DLCD, quote, assess what and to what degree economic and property interests will be affected by a proposed rule. We submit that state regulatory agencies should first determine whether and how natural resources in areas are protected by a proposed rule and how that regulation addresses global warming and energy depletion. The underlying assumption of this bill and its unstated goal is that growth, the unlimited use of limited resources, can be accomplished by making regulations more flexible and less complex, and I quote. That is, by further weakening regulations that presently do not protect our farms, forests, and natural areas. This kind of thinking was anachronistic 3 years ago when the Big Look Task Force was formed. It should be unthinkable now as we confront increasing population, Measure 37 and Measure 49 claims, global warming, energy depletion, and economic uncertainty. On behalf of Lamb Watch Lane County, I urge you to deposit this dinosaur in the dustbin of history. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Emmons. Ms. O'Brien.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Sarah O'Brien. I represent Defenders of Wildlife. I'm also a Clackamas County resident. I'm also speaking on behalf of a coalition of groups today of conservation organizations in and around Oregon. And those are listed in my written testimony. We followed the work of the Big Look Task Force closely and appreciate their hard work and agree with several of their recommendations surrounding supportive regional planning, for example, and strategic planning. Our primary concern, or the concern of these groups, is that the state land use policy does not effectively currently protect natural resources. I know you've heard testimony from Portland Audubon Society, from the American Planning Association on that front, and I won't repeat what you've already heard, but there's a scattered and process-oriented process, but no real mechanism for protecting the natural resources that Oregon's communities and economy depend on. This is increasingly important because neither the existing statute or the recommendations of the Big Look Task Force fully address the need to mitigate and adapt to global warming and climate change. And again, I know you've heard testimony on that. These failures, I think, are widely acknowledged, and there's strong support for increased protection. As I note in my written testimony, 65% of the citizen participants in the Big Look process were in favor of greater protection for natural resources under the state land use planning system. I think it's important that the committee recognize that future changes to the, or current changes, future changes to the land use planning system need to look ahead and confront these problems: global climate change, economic shifts, population growth. Services provided by ecosystems are going to be increasingly important, these should be routinely considered in land use decisions and just are not at this time. There's some more detailed suggestions in the written testimony we've provided, and we'd also be happy to suggest specific language to address these issues. So I thank you again for your time.
Thank you very much. Excellent testimony. Jim Gilbert, Sarah Doomling, and David Adams. On deck we have Mona Lindstromberg, Warren Amy, and Mike Klassen. Mr. Gilbert?
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, I'm Jim Gilbert. I live in Clackamas County. I've made my living farming for 30 years, and I'm chair of the Molalla Community Planning Organization, which represents thousands of residents who live around the city of Molalla. I probably don't need to tell you about the importance of Oregon agriculture. I've certainly found it myself. I've made my living growing nursery stock for 30 years. And our agricultural economy is strong in Oregon. We provide jobs for one out of every 12 Oregonians. We contribute about $12 billion to Oregon's economy. And I've often thought that when I see lists of industries in Oregon, agriculture sadly is not shown often, and it's obviously not sexy like windmills, building windmills and computer chips. However, it's a very big part of our economy and will provide jobs for very many, many more years to come. I know that this issue of House Bill 2229 is the one you'd like to speak about, and I've read it over, and I think there's some positive parts to it. The coordination, better coordination between state agencies sounds good. Measuring the success and meeting our land use goals sounds good. But I am very concerned, as others have mentioned, about this this possible coordination or allowing counties to change the definition of farm and forest land. Local control sounds good. However, in my experience and our organization's experience, local control is typically local politicians, not local residents, working with developers. And I think that this is not the time to be weakening our land use protection. We're all concerned about sustainability, about local food production. We're concerned about food safety, global warming. To me, it's a time to stick with the rules and definitions that we already have. And I'd like to say that our organization, as I think many other people in Oregon would say this, we need your help. we really need you to stick with us and to support these and support these definitions and these rules that already exist, so we can continue fighting the battles that we have already been fighting to protect our valuable farm and forest land. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Doomley.
My name is Sarah Doimling. I live in Polk County and am a family forest land owner. Oregon farm and forest lands and their open spaces are by far our greatest long-term asset. No matter what comes our way in the future, they are our leg up, our ace in the hole, our insurance policy. Historically, in hard times, those communities that have and cultures that have survived the best are those with the best and most resilient land base. We simply have no right to limit the options of future Oregonians in a very uncertain future. If they need more houses on farm and forest land, or more shopping malls, or more resorts, let us and you have the forbearance and the vision to let them make those decisions. The world's population and Oregon's population are growing, while our resource base is not. In fact, the latter is shrinking. As long as we as a society are unwilling to address the issue of an ever-increasing population, we have no choice but to actively protect the resources we have left, to enhance them and nurture them. Local value-added farm and forest products, which many of us are working toward improving and expanding, will serve both the quality of life and the economic stability of our state forever. After a lifetime in Oregon, I feel that devolving more authority for land use decision-making to local jurisdictions is not a good idea. The collective consequences are too great and too permanent, and to me, dictate that land use decisions be made at the state level. And I say this from personal experience in my county, that theoretically I think local control is a good idea, as many people have said, but it's the rare case when it doesn't evolve into something like individual needs instead of the common good and a long-term vision for the state. I do endorse a wide range of methods or tools to reimburse rural landowners if they have genuinely lost value, and I am in favor of as many ways as we can think of to pay for public services or ecosystem services which our lands provide.
Ms. Doimling, can you...
Yes, I urge you, in the name of my grandchildren and yours, to strengthen, not weaken, our land use laws and keep them in the hands of the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Adams?
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Adams. I live in the Stafford Hamlet on the edge of the urban growth boundary up in the Portland area. I want to speak to a really good idea that I heard parties on both sides of the property rights issue deliver to the land use, the task force that didn't seem to make the cut. In Oregon's never-ending conversation regarding land use, much has been made of numerous conflicts that arise when suburbia reaches the ag zone. I am sure all of you are aware of these conflicts. While suburban sensibilities appreciate open space and tranquility of being near a farm zone, the smells, the noise, the actual business of farming offend. Our farmers obviously don't like having to, nor should they be forced to compromise essential chores and activities to accommodate the sensibilities of their new suburban neighbors. I believe most thoughtful folks would agree that creating and maintaining a buffer zone is the best way to avoid these conflicts. In my view, it seems too little attention in our land use system speaks to the wisdom and the benefits of a permanent buffer separating the urban centers and our ag communities. I have two ideas I would like to share that I believe are both timely and beneficial. When I was working on the passage of Measure 49, I heard countless owners of EFU land state that they felt trapped by the all-or-nothing nature of our system as it is now written, in particular the 80-80 rule. Now, I can understand the wisdom of keeping large parcels of industrial ag in the Willamette Valley, but I believe allowing smaller partitions of ag land near the fringe of our urban centers would be beneficial for many reasons. First, we could begin to establish the desirable permanent buffer zone. Second, we would be helping to nurture one of our fastest ag sectors, and that's the niche farming component. And that sector requires close-in and affordable plots of ground. Third, it would provide the opportunity for owners of EFU land to sell small partitions of land that would remain EFU, at the same time realizing much-needed return on investment. I'm not talking about EFU land for homes. Exclusive farm use zoning in small bits. The fourth and final bit is we would also establish permanent wildlife corridors between our counties and the cities.
Excellent.
I see two ways to
Mr.
implement
Adams,
this
can
idea.
You, can you wrap it up, please?
Either through the free market and private ownership of small chunks of ag land, or follow the German model of government ownership of ag land that's leased or rented back in as small farm plots. Attached to my comments is an article about the German model that I hope you'll have time to read. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Appreciate your testimony. Ona Lindstromberg, Warren Aney, and Mike Clausen. I'll have on deck, please, Rand Dawson, Jim Justy with Goal One Coalition, and Gary Reinhardt. Ms. Lindstromberg.
Thank you. Think globally, act locally. This is a refrain we all hear and many have incorporated in our approach to civic participation. All of Oregon is my locality. My ancestors came to Oregon on the wagon trains in the mid-1840s. I take any loosening of land use laws protecting Oregon's farm, forests, and other resource lands very personally. The task force supports individual counties having the authority to redefine what constitutes farm and forest lands in their jurisdictions. Having worked in the land use arena in Lane County for the past 9 years, I can tell you that had Lane County had this authority just in that period of time, the face of Lane County would be that of even more sprawl. Lane County already has processes for the rezoning of miszoned land. Unfortunately, citizens already have to be ever vigilant to make sure that those existing processes are lawfully implemented to protect our resource lands. To allow individual counties greater latitude could be abused and would most likely reflect the power of the purse to the detriment of what is in the public's interest. Oregon is very fortunate in her natural resources. We Oregonians are entrusted with the wise husbandry of these resources, and that means not undermining existing land use regulations, but in strengthening them. And I'm now a resident of Lincoln County. I see my representative is here.
And so our record is complete. Can you record your name for
Ona Lindstromberg, now a resident of Lincoln County.
Thank you very much. Mr. Aney?
Chairman Nolan, members of the committee, my name is Warren Aney, and I live in Washington County, and I am here on behalf of the Oregon Chapter of the Wildlife Society, which is a professional organization with over 300 members engaged in wildlife resource management, administration, research, law enforcement, and consulting, and so on. We'll follow up later with a written statement, but I want to provide a brief oral statement right now on our basically what we're here to do is give a scientific perspective on the expected effects of any proposed activities on wildlife and wildlife habitat. For example, there is a need for protecting strategic and critical wildlife habitat, such as winter range, riparian zones, and wetlands. And their protection is necessary to, and I'll quote from Senate Bill, or House Bill 2229, to provide a healthy environment and to ensure a desirable quality of life. These habitats frequently are not high-quality farmlands or forest lands, so they would be vulnerable to regional redefinition as, quote, other rural lands, and then available for development that would conflict with their value as wildlife habitat. I also note that according to House Bill 2229, that these developments may not lead to significant adverse effects on fish or wildlife habitat or other ecologically significant lands. However, I note that ODFW is not one of the number of state agencies listed as participants. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, pardon me, is not listed as one of the state agencies participating in this overall process. I point out that the department has prepared a strategic plan, the Oregon Conservation Strategy, that the agency and several other entities are using, and this would seem to fit in very well with the requirements of Section 19, we do prepare an integrated state strategic plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Clausen.
Yes, Mike Clausen, Coos County. I'm an abandoned city council person who came up this morning and appreciate the opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you for being here.
Fifth generation Oregonian, fifth generation Coos County. The southwest corner of the state that I live in Coos and Curry counties, it still is the Wild West. They don't like the federal government with their spotted owl rules and taxes, and they don't much like Salem with land use rules and taxes. Coos County used to have coal mines and they still are mining down there. The state land use laws are the only protection we have against the anything goes Wild West mentality. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you much. Rand Lawson. Jim Justy. I'm sorry, I'm not getting Just. I'm sorry. And Gary Reinhart. On deck, I'm going to call Cami Kehoe. If someone would let her know, waiting outside, Jack Spitzmessen and David Engen. Mr. Dawson.
Thank you. Appreciate this opportunity. I'm Rand Dawson. I'm a rural resident in West Lane County. My people walked here to the valley before Walmart. I've been raised in several different counties in the state. I speak in disfavor of sections 5 through 8 and in favor of the performance standards and collaborative planning effort. My background is legal in Alaska, and here I do a lot of volunteer work on the coast in rural conservative communities. I think one of the risks that I've seen with Section 5.8 is there's no demonstrated showing that we need this or that it can work, and it risks cannibalizing the goodwill that's come from prior years of community planning and broader perspective. Let me give you a couple of grassroots examples. One, we're going to have policy fragmentation impacts. The gentleman spoke as to the wildlife corridor impacts. When I was in Alaska, I did a lot of representation in the natural resource area, gave informal advice to the guide board, represented many of the recreational interests up there. The wildlife corridor aspects are exceedingly important. I've worked with, in the background, in Dune City, small rural conservative city on the coast. They voted for Sarah Palin, 7.3%. Maybe they voted for McCain, but certainly for Palin. We got a complete developmental moratorium in Dune City. Even though it was a conservative community, my experience in the background in that community shows that people favor increased protections, what the comprehensive plan offers. They want more predictability and protection of community values. The 5 through 8, I think, conflicts with kind of a precautionary approach to protecting soils and lands. I work to set up new food co-ops, for example, on the coast right now in Florence. There is a rise of localism. There's new patterns of ag use. We want new producers, new growers. We have committees working to bring in new growers. There are going to be whole different patterns of ag use and land use and growing associated with closer areas into small towns. We need to be protecting these types of lands that now we consider marginal. We had a meeting in the library the other day, a complete library packed with people that wanted to understand dung beetles and nematodes. Now, this tells you something on the coast. It's a whole different change of perspective. And so we have a lot of hubris if we think at the local level we can begin to redefine what is productive and what isn't productive, when in fact a lot of our soil science isn't really well developed at this point in time. One of the key elements in our soil science is globulin. It wasn't even discovered until the mid 90s. It's the protein sheath that comes off the microfungi that is responsible for a lot of the soil characteristics in soil. Most soil scientists aren't even aware of how it works. So if we turn over to local government decisions that affect these types of things, the ramifications are long-term. So give us a land reform that's a legacy and not a lottery in the shape of a loophole.
Thank you. Mr. Just.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, my name is Jim Just. I am executive director of Goal One Coalition and a Linn County farmer, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. The Goal One Coalition is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to engage Oregonians in the project of making Oregon's land use planning program responsive to the twin challenges of climate change and energy depletion. And we ask that the committee delete sections 1 through 8 of this bill and adopt sections 9 through 22. Sections 1 and 3 would establish 4 overarching principles for the planning program. These 4 principles, we think, are so general as to be meaningless. They have no legal effect, but really, more importantly, they're really lacking in wisdom and vision. Section 2 would direct LCDC to consider variation in conditions in making their goals, setting the goals and rules. We think LCDC has already done an admirable job of that task and needs no additional direction from the legislature. Sections 5 through 8, you've heard many others today ably present the reasons why those sections are a bad idea. And finally, we support the improvements to the regional planning system, and we strongly support the idea of directing LCDC to engage in strategic planning for the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Reinhart?
Gary Reinhart, Umatilla County, 275 miles down here.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to comment on recommendations of the Big Look Task Force. My name is Gary Reinhart. I'm a fourth-generation wheat farmer.
Mr. Just, would you move that microphone over so Mr. Reinhart
can... I'm a fourth-generation wheat farmer from Pendleton. I farm land that's been in my family for over 150 years, and my family came on the wagon trains, too. I'm also the current chair of the Umatilla County Planning Commission and also the past longtime chair of the Umatilla Basin Watershed Council. I'm here speaking for myself, not for my county. I am here today to encourage you to not weaken our land use system, as I see redefining farm and forest lands will do. Converting farm and forest lands to non-resource or other types of zoning would be a disaster for Oregon. It would encourage rural sprawl on some of our most environmentally sensitive lands. These marginal farmlands, which most of eastern Oregon is, are critical for protecting wildlife habitat, water quality, and quantity. Thousands of acres of farm and forest lands are rezoned each year under our current system, and I see no reason to expand that. Giving counties the authority to rezone land independently, in my opinion, will make our land use system more complex, not simpler. It'll just be a hodgepodge everywhere. As I drove from the Blue Mountain south of Pendleton, down I-84, the Columbia River Gorge, past Mount Hood, and into the Willamette Valley, I saw how beautiful this state is. Our current land use system is not perfect, but does a better job of planning long-term development than any other state. This is Oregon's 150th year anniversary as a state. I encourage you to protect Oregon and do not recommend these changes that will weaken our land use system. If you want to really find out what local control does, go back east and talk to the planners on the East Coast what local control does. I mean, I'm the chair of the commission, but we have to be very, very careful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the effort to drive that far to come and testify to it.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. And thank you for your service on the Planning Commission.
Sometimes that drives that far, she gets an extra minute.
I think his point has been very effectively delivered.
That's what I said.
Cammy Kehoe, Jack Spitznessen, and David Engen. And I will have on deck Kim Tambach, Richard Roth, or Rohde, with the Oregon chapter of APA, and Jim Barda. Ms. Kehoe?
I'm Cami Kehoe. I chair the Holcomb Outlook Community Planning Organization in Clackamas County. I sent an email earlier, but I was able to make it. So I'm here testifying regarding language that's in Section 17 of House Bill 229, which reads, if a city brings territory within its urban growth boundary, the city shall annex the territory to the city. My major concern is that this section may force the annexation of UGB areas into cities, despite the presence of city charter requirements for voter approval of the annexation of said territories. This could potentially undo the rights that citizens in over 30 Oregon cities have given themselves, most of it in the city charters. The right to approve annexations and have the final say how their cities grow. I strongly urge you to make sure that any bill that passes does not in any way undermine voters' rights to approve annexations. It seems that a simple clause added to the section, like subject to any requirements for voter approval of annexations, would clarify that there's no intent to vacate the very important rights of citizens to vote on annexations. The courts have repeatedly upheld the rights of citizens to vote on annexations, and Section 17 is in conflict with settled case law. According to Supreme Court decision Heritage Enterprises versus City of Corvallis, 1985, an annexation decision consists of two parts, a local government decision that a proposed annexation complies with applicable land use and other legal requirements and is appealable to LUBA. It's usually passed as a resolution by the local government body, and the vote of the electorate on whether such an annexation proposal should be adopted, which is not a land use decision that can be appealed to LUBA. It's presented to the voters as a measure in the voters' pamphlet. Secretary of State's office and Attorney General's office recognize that there are two parts to annexation, and the Land Use Committee should likewise. I enclosed in my written testimony that I'm providing copies a letter from the Secretary of State's office to a citizen in Clackamas County after reviewing an annexation election situation, and they spoke with legal counsel from the Attorney General's office, and they laid out proper procedure to contest the election process. The Secretary of State Elections Division does not have jurisdiction over special district procedures involving chapters outside of election laws, ORS chapters 246 to 260, such as the procedures for annexation.
Ms. Kehoe, can you wrap it up, please?
Yep, almost done. Any eligible elector believes that they have grounds for a contest of election, they have to file a contest with the appropriate circuit court. And further is outlined in ORS 258. 0.016, the grounds on which an election can be contested do not include annexation procedures. In closing, I strongly support suggested provisions that would increase efforts to inform and educate citizens on how our land use process works so they can be engaged in the process at times where it can be most effective. Efforts to increase and improve citizen involvement are always appreciated in the basis of State Goal 1. And one more thing. As a chair of a CPO, I reside in a UGB, and this section kind of takes away my rights on whether or not I want to be annexed into a city. And I've heard testimony and citizens in my CPO, old people, when they see a proposed road going through their property with a plan that a city has, it completely devalues their property. And it's something that I think should be taken into consideration. Thank you.
Mr. Spitzmisson? Mr. Spitzmisson?
Back.
Great.
I'm a retired farmer from Hood River, and I had an experience here in the last few years. My wife and I go to California in the wintertime, and we go to Morro Bay, which is similar to, the region is similar to what we have here in the Willamette Valley. It's a corridor. We live in a corridor from Portland to Eugene, rather narrow. And all of the ingredients of resource are present in this corridor and bring about conflict, concern, and so forth. The area that we go to in California is also a corridor, a coastal corridor, 10 miles wide and probably hundreds of miles long. In that region, there's an effort to maintain stability in terms of farming practice, small tourist towns, and so forth. One of the organizations in that corridor on the coast of California is the Hearst Corporation, which has its primary center in L.A., lawyers and bankers, and they own 95,000 acres in that corridor. The Hearst Corporation came to the San Luis Obispo County Development Commissioners and proposed to them a development just in the vicinity of the San Simeon region. That included a 10-story building, malls, and golf links. The San Luis Obispo County commissioners agreed to this, and the result was that there was a great deal of conflict that occurred between the citizens of the region and the proposal. The citizens of the region called upon a unique organization that we have somewhat similar in the state of Oregon. We call it the Land Use Commission. In California, it's a Coastal Commission.
Mr. Spitzmessen, can you reach your conclusion, please?
The California Coastal Commission reviewed the proposal and voted it down 10 to 1. The suggested alternatives were non-acceptable to the Hearst Corporation, and so it was left alone. The region now that was in contest is in the hands of California. Conservation organizations in California provided $40 million to purchase the developmental rights on that land.
One last sentence, please.
The reason I'm speaking to you is the risk of allowing counties to determine your land use laws. The San Luis Obispo counties were pro-development. They virtually created a great deal of problems. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Engen?
My name is David Engen. I'm from Marion County, and I appreciate the chance to talk to you, Chair Nolan, and also members of the committee. I oppose the Big Look Task Force final report because of the two counties' petition for regional criteria proposal that's in there. I also wanted specifically to come in and talk to you about the Forest Capital Planners who testified for you. This is a forestry magazine from June 2008, and in this magazine they talk about what's happening to many of our forests, and I'll give you a new acronym. It's WUI, the Wildlands Urban Interface. And this is where houses are being built in the forest, but the Forest Service has to protect those houses and private property from fires, which is made in national forests. And if the current trends continue, almost the whole budget of the Forest Service is going to be eaten up protecting private property in our national forests and near our national forests. That's what this article talks about. And I'll read you a little bit of it here. It's in my notes that I sent to you. Local policies aimed at reducing development sprawl, such as urban growth boundaries and transfer of development rights, should have a positive impact on reducing development in the wildland urban interface. And cities also play a significant role. Oh, 30 seconds. I'll skip that part and I'll read you the last sentence then.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
However, national and state mandated land use policies are not subject to commission approval, making them a key instrument in addressing wildfire problems, particularly in the rural West. I went to some meetings of the Big Look Committee. I actually made them a copy of this and took it over there. And when I was doing that, in California, hundreds of houses were being destroyed by wildland fires, and I pointed that out to them. I don't know if it made any effect on it or not, but I hope that you maintain the current laws and do not go for this two-county thing. That's really a bad step. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your testimony, gentlemen. Kim Tamback, Richard Ross, and Jim Barta. On deck, we have Rob Revel, Brian Hines, and Brock Howell. Kim Tamback, please.
I'm Kim Tamback. I'm on the Crook County Planning Commission in Crook County, and I've served on that position for 10 years. Much of House Bill 2229, I appreciate, and some of it I certainly oppose. I have had good support from Bend, DLCD, and Division of State Lands in Salem as a planning commissioner. And one of the nice things about having state control is that in a small community, when we face up toe-to-toe with developers or with citizens about land use regulations, it's kind of nice to be able to point a little bit outside the county line about why we're doing what we're doing in terms of Oregon land use law. And so I want you to know that much of the Big Look Task Force, their recommendations I support. How it has funneled down into this legislation, I'm not sure I feel as positive about. Certainly the two county coming together to make regional goals, I don't approve of, because if you look at the three counties that we are frequently lumped in with, Crook, Deschutes, and Jefferson, when we go out for grants, all three of us have to provide as much input as the big county over there, Deschutes or whatever, and the amount of money that comes to us is quite small. So our goals with regard to transportation, our goals with regard to recreation and so on are very different, and when I look at the way that Deschutes County has looked at farmland and the way Crook County looks at it, it's very, very different. As well, Our soils are quite different, and so I just want you to know that I think that local control, our planning commissions are doing that now, but we need support statewide and from state agencies that do an admirable job. Thank you.
Thank you. And would you give regards to Commissioner Lundquist for us?
I will.
Thank you.
Richard Ross, and I am a member of the American Planning Association Oregon Chapter Subcommittee on the Big Look, and I'm here to make some informal comments today. I think you heard from our chapter president, Greg Winterode, recently, and I'm also a technical advisory committee member for the Big Look, but we only met twice. Don't know why, but that was in a year's time. Oregon Planning Association, Oregon American Planning Association, has been involved in the Big Look since 2005, since day one when the bill was developed. In 2007, Dean Nohad Tulan, PSU Planning School, and myself presented a paper to the task force called "Planning Better Together" with a comprehensive proposal for reform of the Oregon planning system. It's on their website. It's on the Big Look website. I want to call your attention to several striking proposals that have come up in the last year for improving statewide and regional planning outside of the Big Look. First, California Senate Bill 375 has linked land use, transportation, and housing plans and greenhouse gas reductions, and it may be the nation's most comprehensive effort to reduce sprawl. We should be looking next door for some ideas on how we could have more sustainable plans for our regions. Want to call your attention also to the Governor's Climate Change Integration Group report, which called for transforming our planning processes to deal with climate change through holistic regional planning. And the Governor's Transportation Vision Committee, in November of last year, proposes integrated regional land use and transportation plans to reduce greenhouse gases. So clearly, there's more things involved than what you have in this particular bill. Oregon APA, looking at the bill, thinks that the Oregon planning system needs more cooperative and less fragmented planning by local communities, regions, and the state. And to quote Governor Schwarzenegger, we'll be back to give you some ideas on this, some proposals for improving this bill, particularly in the area, particularly sections 5 through 8 in the area of regional planning. How could we do some
more innovative and effective regional planning that doesn't give away some of the issues you've heard today. Also, some ideas for changes to state strategic planning. We think that Oregon can do better. It can have plans for the 21st century that address land use, transportation, economy, climate change, and natural resources all together.
Thank you. And both to you, since you suggested you will provide language, specific language later, and to other witnesses, if it is not in your written testimony, but you have specific proposals you would make, now or very soon is the time to do that, because we will be going into work session on this bill probably next week after our second public hearing. So do not let too much time pass.
We'll be back next week.
Great. Thanks. Mr. Barta?
Thank you. My name is Jim Barta. I'm from Multnomah County. I speak for myself here, private citizen. I oppose the measure as written because I believe it will weaken the land use system in Oregon. The reason I believe this is because of the proposal to allow counties to redefine the existing farm and forest land on their own. Personal relationships between local decision makers and developers would lead to pressure to redefine farm and forest land for development solely for short-term economic gain. Oregon protects irreplaceable resource land better than most states. The task force acknowledges this in their report. The task force gives no good reasons to weaken the system. I support task force proposals for new performance measures to improve our land use system and oppose the proposal to allow counties to redefine resource land. It makes no sense to weaken a system that works so well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to all of you. Rob Breville, Brian Hines, and Brock Howell. On deck, we have Ralph Stinton, Susan Chapman, and Rich Harrison, Marion County Democrats. Mr. Reville?
Oh, right here.
Oh, I'm sorry?
I live in...
My mistake.
Rob Revel. I live in Deschutes County. Though much of this bill pretends to have good intentions, the details are faulty. I'm opposed to giving counties the right to decide on the nature of lands within their boundaries. Natural systems have no political boundaries. The land use laws of Oregon must be integrated and planned as a whole, scientifically. Please do not leave such vital decisions to counties under the pressure of local developers.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hines?
Brian Hines, Marion County. My wife and I represent many neighbors who live on small acreages in the South Salem Hills. About 75 people have contributed over $30,000 to the Keep Our Water Safe Committee, and many more support the committee's efforts. These have been directed at protecting local ground and surface water from a 217-acre, 43-lot Measure 37 subdivision that threatens wells and the springs that feed the community-owned lake. For 2.5 years, we've experienced firsthand the problems that arise when county land use decisions are made on a political basis, using this term, political, broadly to mean preconceived biases unrelated to the facts of a land use situation. Many counties in Oregon have three-member commissions, as Marion County does. This means that one person often holds sway over land use decisions, casting the deciding vote in favor of additional development, even in the face of factual information, in our case, a water study conducted by the county's own hydrogeology experts that shows the folly of permitting a subdivision to sprout on farmland. What HB 2229 would do is politicize the Oregon land use planning system to an even greater degree. Here's our prediction of what would happen if this bill became law. Currently, Measure 49 prevents large-scale development such as was planned on the groundwater-limited farmland in our neighborhood, unless the claimant is able to show that the project has been vested under common law. In many or most cases, vesting won't be demonstrated. So you can picture and almost entirely accurately predict that many Measure 37 claimants who lobby county commissioners to rezone their land via the HB 2229 regional definition process. This would largely occur outside of public view, making a mockery of the fair and equitable land use planning process that the Big Look Task Force appropriately calls for. We and our neighbors who support the Keep Our Water Safe Committee urge you to strip the regional definition provision from HB 2229. It's a solution in search of a problem and won't bring more clarity, fairness, and equity to Oregon's land use system. Please keep in mind that for every property owner who considers that his or her farm or forest land is wrongly zoned and wants to turn it into a subdivision, there are many more neighbors of the property who also have property rights, such as the right to not have their wells go dry from excessive development. The Big Look Task Force appears to have focused on unfairness in the land use system as perceived by the first relatively small group of people. We can assure you, from extensive contacts with large numbers of neighbors, that many more people are concerned about another type of unfairness. This occurs when land use decisions are made not on the basis of facts and statutory standards, but from preconceived notions of decision makers that stem from their political and philosophical beliefs regarding property rights, environmental protection, and other issues. There's nothing wrong with having such
beliefs. Concluding point, please.
So we can assure you that allowing county elected officials to initiate changes to how these farm and forest lands are defined will be viewed by most people in our area as a movement away from fairness and equity for all Oregonians, the stated Big Look Task Force goal. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Howell.
Thank you, Chair Nolan and members of the committee. My name is Brock Howell, and I am the Transportation Land Use Advocate for Environment Oregon. Environment Oregon is a statewide citizen-based advocacy group here in Oregon working to protect our clean air, clean water, and open spaces. We support both the Big Look Task Force effort to make our land use planning system better and certain attributes of HB 2229. More specifically, we support the infill infrastructure prioritization, which we believe is necessary for creating the 21st century communities that are walkable, that can support mass transit, and that we can have vibrant town centers. We also support this the process of creating a strategic plan for the state, setting benchmarks so that way we know whether we're achieving our land use planning goals. We think those are all admirable parts of this. There's one key compartment of this bill that we think it could be very bad, and that is allowing inconsistencies in the definitions of farm and forest lands. We have three principal concerns about this. One is the conversion of farmland. Two is that it will harm long-held investment expectations of landowners, which we've heard here by quite a few farmers, and that it's going to create a lot of uncertainty in the current system, resulting in a lot of litigation. With the first of Lawson Farms, the definitions should be generally applicable to any situation in the state. There's no reason why any situation in a particular location is different. Certainly, the crops that grow is different. The geography is different. But agriculture for those particular crops, the viability is the same no matter what that crop is. So the definitions should be statewide in application and not on a case by or a county by county basis of resulting in lowest common denominator of counties competing for more development. So that is our main thing. With that, we don't see the current system as broken down. We've had 20,000 acres in the last from 1989 to 2007 be changed from farm uses to other rural uses. So we don't see the system as failing. And so thank you for your time today. If you have any questions in the future, I'll be available. So
thank you for your testimony. Yep. Thank you, gentlemen. Ralph Stinton, Susan Chapman, Richard Harrison. Colleagues, I have another engagement that I need to get to, so Vice Chair Garrett is going to preside for the rest of the meeting.
Okay. Hi, my name is Ralph Stinton, Multnomah County, and I have a small business, and I would like to say I am pro-business, but I'm also pro-preservation of land, and I think the two can marry together, and they work very well with the system as it is today. Within this framework, I developed a company that has to do with agritourism. And we basically take people out from Portland and take them into the wine country to visit the different wineries. And what they notice throughout the trip is they see the trip from Portland and kind of suburbia, and then we hit the urban growth boundary line. and we're out in the countryside, and people just relax and really start enjoying the experience. The company has grown dramatically over the last 15 years. Last year, we took out about 2,500 customers, and they all buy quite a bit of wine, about an average of 3 bottles per person. And what I'm trying to talk about is the trickle-down, kind of the economic benefit that we, that a lot of us really get from the land use system as it is, the land being protected, that we wouldn't have if it were gone. And we only have, you know, one opportunity to, if the land is used for development, then we won't have the pristine area to take the people out anymore. But one of the things, too, you know, besides we visited 91 wineries last year who employ people that pay taxes. We have employees that we take out. We have a caterer that we work with. Our people go out to restaurants. They stay at hotels. And so I think the trickle-down, thank you, is not only within Multnomah County. It's Marion County. It's Yamhill County. It's Polk. We actually go down to the southern part of the state. And I would just like to encourage you to stay with the system as it is now, because I think the benefit in agritourism is really coming on strong now. There's going to be a new, within Newburgh, there will be a new facility coming up called the Allison that is playing right into that. And I just think that we're on the verge of something great. It's not only the wine country. It's a lot of other crops, too, with agritourism. But thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Susan Chapman, Multnomah County, just private citizen, although I also work for Grape Escape, but I'm going to speak from a different perspective, and then I'm actually going to defer my testimony because my testimony was given so articulately by Ms. Carl, the very first witness. My family has likewise immigrated here 180 years ago and farmed in the Yamhill County region for 5 generations, and they're still farming there. My grandfather was commissioner of Yamhill County in the 50s and was a longtime farming advocate. So virtually every point I wanted to make, she made beautifully and perfectly. So I am going to defer to that. The only other thing I want to say is about business, that I am likewise pro-business, and that if we've learned nothing from the economic woes of the last year, and some of our thinking around business and bottom-line profitability is that good business is more than bottom-line profitability. It must include that, but it also must include an ethicism about long-term vision, long-term collateral effects, especially when you have the grace to live in what is one of the richest agricultural regions in the world. So we need to protect it. And I hope you'll consider keeping our land use planning laws as they are. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Richard Harrisay. I'm in Marion County. I'm the chair of the legislative committee of the Marion County Democratic Party. And I'm here to tell you that we have taken a position against 2229 House Bill. We feel that in the current, well, part of it is in the current economic crisis, it'll be very important to have every available acre of farmable land because I think somehow we will be saviors of the nation, if not our own state. On a personal note, I want you to know that I moved here 22 years ago at a time when the sentiment was that you should come, leave your money, and go back home. But I stayed. So in any case, I am faced with the current problems with land use. And the reason that I came here to begin with was because I lived in the Santa Clara Valley. Many of you know that as Silicon Valley. Well, I started out there where there were orchards all around me. And when I left, there were 8-lane highways and malls everywhere, and there was not an inch of open land available anywhere. And I decided to move my family because this was a bad atmosphere to be in because it had crime and drugs and all kinds of problems there. I didn't want my daughter, who was approaching school age, to grow up in that environment. And came up here, and she graduated valedictorian of her high school and went on to get a full ride to an Ivy League college in the East. That justified, or what should I say, validated my move. We object to county control because what they do can affect the entire state, and it can generate competition among counties. One does something, another county feels they have to keep up or whatever, and before you know it, of course, we've got unregulated sprawl.
Mr. Harrison, can you try and bring it to a finish? Thank you.
I would much recommend that you take a field trip to the Santa Clara Valley. And if you are to amend this bill, I would suggest the following amendment. Scrap everything except Oregon is a nice place, and it should stay that way.
All right. Thank you all very much. Kay Peterson, Peter Kanegi, and George Forsman.
My name is Kay Peterson. I live in Marion County. I just want to challenge the mindset that sprawl onto farm and forest land is inevitable. There are better ways to accommodate more people instead of sprawling onto forest and farmland. I lived in Bavaria, Germany, in the late 1970s. When I returned for a visit in 2005, I happily discovered that in many of the towns I was familiar with, they had not sprawled onto farmland. The towns were the same size. Growth is carefully managed by the German government. To pave over farm and forest land to allow suburbia-type development in rural areas is short-sighted. We are dangerously close to becoming an importer of food instead of an exporter. In these precarious economic times, that is, in my opinion, dangerous. We need comprehensive planning on a statewide level. And I want to say that my cousin, Lolita Carl, Kathleen Carl, who testified before me, that's my mother was born on that farm that they're still farming. And one other thing, some of my best friends do live in Clackamas County, but you will notice there are lots of little tiny farms and little small pockets of suburban-type development as opposed to Marion County. And that is a result of my uncle, Lolita's father, working very hard in Marion County before 1973 for strong protection of farmland. So I'm happily and proud to continue his tradition. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Vice Chair Garrett, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. My name is Peter Kanegi. I am a farmer from Benton County. I'm also a 12-year veteran of the Benton County Planning Commission. There's been an awful lot of good testimony given, presented to you here today, and 90% of it I agree wholeheartedly with, so I won't get into too much detail. I will say that, you know, like you've heard from a lot of other people, the local control, allowing counties to petition to change their definition of resource lands is a bad idea. The one type of local control, which I think, unfortunately, the Big Look did not recommend, but which I think could safely be put into a bill would be to give counties and local jurisdictions the right to, or particularly cities, the right to not have to provide the 20-year buildable supply of land. That is, you know, allowing cities to say enough is enough, you know, we're as big as we want to get. And if we want to add people, we're going to go up, we're not going to go out on farmland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, my name is George Forsman. I have a piece of property out in Canby, Oregon. I used to own 90 acres. I'm down to 20, thanks to LCDC. And right now I'm facing bankruptcy. But anyway, because of the Measure 3749 gaffe. Anyway, I had a piece of property in Florida, and my consequences of seeing how Florida developed their property rights or zoning to compare it to Oregon, I think they had a plan that people ought to really look at. And the plan was that they had was they went outside the city limits 5 miles. And that land for that building was allowed to be cut up into 5-acre parcels. The county took every quarter section, so every 40 acres the county had a complete easement around the quarter section. They either modified the quarter section to make like some 38 acres, 430, but they had the easements on it, they had the basic roads. This was in Grove areas, Orange Groves. There, and this was done over 20 years ago. There's no houses out there because the crops are viable. And what you have in the state of Oregon here is a case where you have marginal land and high productive land all being treated the same. And the problem is the people that have the marginal land can't make a living off it, can't even raise cattle for a profit. And that's what happened to me. I got tired of spending over 20 years trying to develop beef animals because I couldn't raise wheat. I couldn't raise corn and this kind of stuff. I could only have grass because it was marginal land. Under Measure 37, I was given the right to develop it. Well, the state approved my property for septic for the 20 houses on the 20 acres because it was zoned that way when I bought the property. It was back in 66, and it was actually unfarmed zoning, but my neighbors were subdividing the property. Now,
I need to ask you, Mr. Forsman, to try and wrap
this up. Okay, and it's, all I'm trying to say is I think that the plan is should be slightly modified, and I think the thing that should be modified on it is to allow, define what prime agricultural land is. Class 3, Class 4 soils is not prime farmland. It's marginal. Class 1 and Class 2, yes, you could classify those. You cannot, and that marginal land should be allowed to be broken up in some smaller parcels, incorporating a similar, like Florida did.
All right, thank you. Thank you all very much. Tom Brawley, Greg Malinowski, and Peter Walker, if he's here. Either one. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Tom Brawley. Hope you can hear me. I am a commercial farmer from Marion County and have farmed in Marion County over 30 years and witnessed the loss of commercial farm ground steadily, not only in Marion County but throughout the state of Oregon. And it bothers me because we're under the best system in the United States, and so this is happening throughout the states, and we have the best system to protect us against it. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you folks today. I feel like I've been among friends, because the majority of the people who have testified have certainly been on my side of the fence. And I say that because there are two types of people that testify before you. The first testify to profit, and to use the weak argument of property rights. I say property rights. I didn't know if you heard that or not. Secondly, there are those who are here to protect the land, which is a decreasing, it is a non-renewable resource, which provides us with something fairly essential. The people here today have alluded to it, but none of them have said that we need to eat. And until we come up with a good substitute for eating, we best protect what provides us with that. We have a unique place in this state of Oregon. We have a unique place in the United States. We have a unique place in the world. And we best protect it. We need to protect it. And I'll tell you one of the ways I think we can. It's up to you. The system of local control has been wisely looked at years ago with Senate Bill 100 and from then till now. And they were very wise when they decided that we should come under a higher authority. And that higher authority is LCDC. The good old boy system is alive and well. And it flourishes at the local level. And we know that. So I ask you to protect us against that. The responsibilities you've got are heavy.
Thank you very much, Mr.
I'm not done yet, but I'd like to finish really quickly, if I may.
All right, just...
Okay, and I can talk to you about, and if you would like to know, I can talk to you about exceptions that have been made to our system to allow for differences. They have been there. They've been allowed. We've got 50 exceptions to our zoning law now, and we can go on. Thank you for your service, each of you. I know it's not easy, and I thank you for that. I ask you for wisdom and foresight.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Malinowski.
Thank you. My name is Greg Malinowski. I'm a partner in Malinowski Farms. We're an organic farm in the Springville Road area, right close to Forest Park. In addition to growing organic crops, we do also provide habitat for deer and elk and hawks and eagles and great blue herons and other things. And we can do all this and still run a successful farm. I'm very concerned about some of the recommendations that have come forth, particularly, as you've heard already, county control. If you've got my sheet of paper in front of you, you can see example one. A developer bought some forest land in Washington County out by McCray Creek, logged it off, went down to the county and said, hey, it's miszoned, it's not good forest land, the trees are all gone. And the county said, yeah, you're right, let's make it farmland. And then after that took effect, he went down to the county and said, hey, this is miszoned, it's farmland, it's covered with stumps, and it's not cost effective for me to clear the stumps because there's other ground in the area that doesn't have stumps. And the county said, oh, you're right, we should have made that rural residential. And he was so excited he went out and bought two more forests. All right? That's Washington County, that's planned at the county level. And the folks at McKay Creek were able to come down here to Salem and get it fixed, because in Salem there are rules and regs and measurable ways of measuring things. Another example with Douglas County on here, I won't go into it, you can read it, but basically they were very much in favor of 37, apparently because they got too much timber down there and they need less of it. We would not have any vin culture in this state. We would not have any vin culture in this state if we had gone with the original land use planning rules of saying, will it grow wheat? Because that ground is not good wheat ground, and we'd have lost all of it. And my other thing is, let you know, we do have class 3 and 4 soil on the farm. The other gentleman mentioned there aren't 4 classes of soil, there are 8. It's just that we're so blessed in the Willamette Valley, we basically just have the 4. And on our farm, class 3 land can make $12,000 a year in gross sales of vegetables. So 20 acres is more than enough land to work yourself to death and make a ton of money doing it. So, and I do thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And I just thank you, but I would like to see that part of this bill fixed. We don't need to throw more variance in it. Washington County developers give money to both candidates in the same race because it's not important who wins. It's important that they're your friend. And that's what we live with. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Walker, Dr. Walker.
My name is Peter Walker. I'm reading excerpts from a letter that I'm giving to the committee. I'm a professor of geography at the University of Oregon, speaking for myself. I'm a trained researcher on matters of public involvement and environmental policy. I'm presently writing a book on Oregon land use politics, a big project. And as part of that process, I observed the Big Look process closely, attending most of the task force meetings since summer 2008, as well as participating in 8 out of the 11 Big Look town hall meetings across the state. I'm not offering any opinions about the proposed legislation. Rather, my comments pertain only to the process by which the task force reached its proposals. The view of the majority of the participants with whom I spoke was that the public outreach part of the Big Look process was at best ineffectual. Worse, it was often perceived as an intentional effort to give the image of public participation when decisions had already been made. Specifically, what I heard were, one, public participation was only invited near the end of the Big Look process, and the main parameters of the policy proposals put forward by the task force had already been predetermined. Two, many participants complained that the town hall meetings were highly scripted and controlled, with topics for discussion decided in advance. Three, many participants were astonished that they were given so little time for discussion of any topics, in some cases less than 5 minutes for group discussions. Four, many participants also complained that the meetings in general, and the Big Look video in particular, were aimed more at public persuasion than public participation. Some participants objected that the questions that the Big Look survey asked were leading, unclear, and forced participants to choose from highly scripted sets of choices. Finally, in my observation, damage was done to the public confidence that the state is committed to citizen involvement, and in the end, public participation in the Big Look process was not implemented in a manner consistent with statewide planning goal one. I advise your committee to consider whether, in the eyes of Oregon citizens, the legitimacy of any resulting legislation or the land use planning process as a whole may be compromised as a result. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. Thank you all for testifying. The last name I have on the list is Joan Zuber.
Thank you.
And is there anybody else in the room who didn't sign up or would like to testify? Okay.
Hello. My name is Joan Zuber, and I'm a small timber lot owner in Clackamas County. I actually have two letters from two individuals to turn in, and I arrived late, and I heard a lot of the testimony, which I would say I agree with. And in my area, we have had a firsthand look of the pitfalls of local control without having the state LCDC as an option or oversight. And it hasn't been so much at the county level, but it's been at our town that we live closest to. I would say that we need to keep the state as to keep a handle on the elected officials who make bad planning decisions. And I'll just, in the interest of time, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you all for traveling to testify this afternoon. As the chair said at the beginning, we will have another hearing to receive public testimony next Tuesday, starting at 3 p.m., going for 1 hour, and then we will resume at 6 p.m. and go until approximately 8 p.m. And that is it for the business today. So we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2229.
This wireless is entirely cool because I got everyone's information.